Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. I'm joined by my old pal, one of the OGs of Conduct Detrimental, that is Professor Taryn Sharma. Welcome back, Taryn.
Yeah, I missed you, Dan. Definitely getting older. I am an old pal now.
You are an old pal. You're speaking, Taryn. This is how old and how distinguished you are. Professor Sharma, which was not always your title, is now a speaker at the upcoming Sports Lawyers Association conference this weekend. Taryn, I have a list. Like, if you look behind me, I have like all these different name cards over here. I've never spoken at SLA, Taryn. So you've now rocketed past me. The student has become the teacher, Taryn. I'm really proud of you, man. That's awesome.
You'll always be my Obi-Wan, Dan. And can you believe it? I mean, this all started. I was only able to really enter this space because you and I had a conversation because I found you on LinkedIn. So yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's awesome that we're able to do this, to have our hobby be something that other people are interested in hearing about. It's great. I feel very lucky.
Taryn, listen, we're old friends, so I can call it like I see it. Our initial interaction was not on LinkedIn. It was on Twitter. And when you were under the guise of a different username, perhaps of a famous director, Quentin Tarantino.
No, but I the first time that I saw you, you had made a video about Kevin Durant's Achilles.
Oh, that's how we made the connection. You said, I've been talking to you on Twitter and I'm Tarantino. And I'm like, that guy I thought was a 40-year-old man.
No, I watched that video and then I started following you on Twitter. And then you were the only, you and Dan were the only people talking about Zion.
And you're a big Duke guy.
Yeah, I remember. I was very eager to defend Zion's honor.
So I don't think I knew that part of the story, but I do remember, and you know, I've told this on the show before, but we have new listeners. I found this person who was in my DMs, and actually, we'll see if this person listens to the podcast, but they're like you did not have your username as something that, or your bio as something that I identified as being a very law student or a lawyer. I just thought you were really smart, and I assumed an older gentleman because you had a picture of a baby in your profile. So I'm like, yeah, this guy's probably got young kids, probably, you know, maybe close to my age. And then I found out that, Taryn, you had a picture of your own baby picture as a Twitter. That's somewhat of a bold and misleading move. So I would not have assumed that. But I'm happy it all worked out. You changed your bio. Now you're Taryn Sharma. And then you got jobs, you're speaking, you're teaching, and it's all lovely, Taryn. So I'll take a little bit of an assist. But beyond just telling you to have a real profile, you've done everything else by yourself.
Yeah, well, you're my Nicholas Backstrom.
Okay, I don't catch the reference.
I'm Ovechkin in that case.
Yeah, but I'm a Rangers fan, and I don't want to have any affiliation with the Capitals.
Because they've won a Stanley Cup in our lifetime?
Or... I was born in 88, so yes, they have won a Stanley Cup in our lifetime. Take that, Taryn. Okay, anyway. anyway, so we have a somewhat of a loaded topic on the show. We didn't record last week. I'll explain momentarily, but we are back. We got five topics on the docket this week. We're going to talk about the update. It is an interesting one in the Shohei saga. It's rather quick. We have three heavy-hitting college sports topics, the update in House versus NCAA, the College Football Players Association coming out swinging, and interesting legislation proposed by the NCAA in terms of by Congress in terms of an antitrust exemption for the NCAA. And last but not least, Taryn, I didn't think we were going to talk about hockey. I did plan to talk to you about basketball. And my New York Knickerbockers, who like the New York Rangers, are both making some interesting runs. But I know you have some thoughts there. So before we do that, a reminder, our show is sponsored by Themis Bar Review, top bar prep company in the entire galaxy. A congrats. I'm seeing a lot of these coming out. You know, people getting sworn in this week, people passing the February bar. So shout out to Themis. If you are looking for anything for your bar needs, think about Themis. If you are a college kid and you're pre-law and you're like, what's Themis? That is a bar prep company designed to help you pass the bar. Everyone talks about the bar. No one tells you how to do it. There are bar prep companies similar to, like, your, I'm not allowed to say competitors, but however, whatever you use for the PSATs, for the SATs, for the LSATs, Themis is a bar company designed specifically for the bar. So always happy to help you with that. But at some point before the end of the show, I'll look at my phone. We have a new promo code. So I will, if you remind me, Taryn, I will bring that up. So, Taryn, last week I had to finish my final exams for my New York Law School class and my Pace Law School class. So I was running around. I wasn't really sleeping. I had a anyone from my firm's listening, I had a lot of non-billable hours last week, but I was writing two law school exams. It's pretty hard to do, Taryn, and record a podcast and coach soccer and be a degenerate gambler and betting on a lot of things. So, you know, podcast, I'm sorry, took a break for a week. Hopefully we're forgiven.
Yeah, it's been tough to keep up with everything. Like you, I had the end of my billable year.
Congrats. This is your January 1st. Why don't you explain what the end of the billable year means at your weird firm that does April? That's kind of weird.
My amazing firm. But yeah, the way that it works, I think for any non-lawyers or people that are hoping to become lawyers, essentially you have a year from one day to 1 year from then to bill a certain number of hours. And so and that number is called par. And the entire goal is to reach your par within a year and hopefully a little bit more, because at least for my firm and what I understand for most firms is that if you exceed the number of hours over your par, then they pay you out in some sort of production bonus.
Like,
so
like a birdie bonus, right? That's what we're getting at. I got it.
Yeah. And I was lucky enough to reach that number. So it's been great to be able to start to get towards figuring out how to balance my interests outside of work with wanting to learn how to be a good attorney and learn those skills and be a productive member of the firm. So I'm in great appreciation of the people that I work with and the people that I get to do this stuff with, like you, Dan.
That's great, Taryn. And we don't have to get into all the details, but I've once told Taryn, and you and I had the story offline, and I'm not going to share any specifics, but it's certainly an art to balance your passion with your day job. So I think, Taryn, when we had that conversation, I don't think you had balanced it quite as well as you have done today. And I told you, don't be me, because when we first met was at my last firm, I had a lot more flexibility to post online and do stuff like that. And I think, as our OG listeners will see, I'm not posting as much, but let's just say things are going really well at the firm. So you got to strike a balance. And when you have kids and you do this, you got to pick your spots. But I love coming on the podcast generally each and every week. Sometimes you got to take a week off, but this has been my safe harbor. So I don't tweet 10 times a day like I used to, which was a real number. No shortage of takes, and I save my takes behind a paywall because I have my clients pay me for that. So, you know, listen, we make it happen, but the podcast is free. We're never going to do Patreon, but a lot of podcasts go behind Patreon and this, we have fun. This is an outlet to talk about sports law, and that's what we will do. Okay. I have an announcement at the end of this, but let's get to the real topic. So, Taryn, let's start. We have an interesting update in the Shohei Ohtani era. You have not been on any of the shows with me. I talked about it with Mike Krivchenko, with Zach Bryson. We don't need to relitigate the whole Shohei stuff. But I will ask you this, and just keep this kind of brief, but this will kind of color the next part of our conversation. Taryn, are you one of these people? And I'm not, don't read into this, but are you someone that believes that this is a cover-up and that Shohei Ohtani did bet or otherwise knew of this and there's being some type of cover-up with Shohei?
Yeah, Dan, I hate the Dodgers, as I think you do also.
Go Giants.
But no, as much as I would wish ill upon the Dodgers, their star, Shohei Ohtani, I don't think knew about any of this.
That was quick. I thought you were going to give me more, but we can let it suffice. I came on the show and I felt pretty confident in my assertion that something's not adding up. How does your best friend have a 20, you know, a giant gambling debt of millions of dollars and you don't know anything about it? And you're supposed to be best friends in this. Like, I know my friends that gamble a lot. We talk a lot about it. Doesn't really make sense, but I think there are probably some aspects that are not necessarily cover up that are not being spoken about publicly that Shohei probably knew a little bit more than he let on. But I do think that this was the gambling occurred outside of and the permissions for accounts occurred outside of Shohei. Now, that said, there's really no update on that front. We do have an interesting update, which my wife, who is a big Real Housewives person, she said, you hear about this Real Housewives connection to the Shohei Ohtani stuff. And I'm like, A, how do you know who Shohei Ohtani is? Because you don't know anything about baseball. And B, you're going to have to enlighten me because I don't know who this is. So, Taryn, does your significant other, can we say your significant other's name on the podcast? Is that okay? Will she be?
Yeah.
You say it, because I'm not going to say it. You say it.
Yeah, no, Hadley is not a big reality TV person.
Oh, that's
so I did not know who this person was.
Well, my wife is a housewife's person. She's a we'll say she's not a not an Orange County person, but she watches enough of the Housewives. But somehow the Instagram algorithms understood that she was interested in Housewives news. So even though she's into Vanderpump, she's in this one, this thing popped up. And I probably talk about Shohei Ohtani enough that Instagram was potentially, allegedly, probably listening to her conversations, and it fed her this. So I think this guy's name is pronounced Ryan Boyajian. There was a lot of conversations we had on previous episodes that Ipe Mizuhara was texting. That's the interpreter, obviously, for Shohei, was texting with some affiliate of this gambling company and was basically texting how much is going to be paid, when is it going to be paid, you know, different conversations about making payments and making wires and all this other stuff. It turns out that that individual, allegedly, according to ESPN, was a quote, a current cast member of Bravo's reality TV series, The Real Housewives of Orange County. So he's a, I believe, a 47-year-old man that lives out in California. Now, where the legal part comes in here, which I find this to be interesting, and again, why I asked you about your thoughts on this, it's just another point in our favor, Taryn, is maybe I'm a little bit, I think it's a little bit of a cover-up, not like a full cover-up. Some people are very adamant that Shohei was the actual better and he pays the fall guy. You seem to be on the spectrum that Shohei was not involved at all, which is totally fine. But according to you know, documents now released by ESPN, this guy Ryan Boyajian is communicating with authorities in terms of finding cooperating and you know, we'll say I don't know how to phrase this other than he seems to be providing information for immunity. That seems to be the report. But the allegation is that Boyajian might have been funneling the money that he received through Ipe Mizuhara into an account that he had with Resorts World Las Vegas Casino and other Vegas casinos, so that the illegal gambling money would then be passed through the casino, and then he would take the money given to the casino, he'd exchange that for chips, and he would gamble with the chips. So it's not quite money laundering as one might think about it. But these casinos seemingly were profiting, if we believe the reports, are through this backwards Mizuhara Shohei scheme. So we have not heard the last of it, but those, if anybody was wondering why these casinos were being investigated, that seems to be the missing dot. So the money that went from Shohei's account seemed to have gone in some indirect way to these Vegas casinos to this guy, Ryan Boyajian. We'll see if he remains a member of the Real Housewives of Orange County cast. And I have a feeling that those ratings for Real Housewives are probably going to tick up a little bit. But
especially because apparently there was already drama, according to Us Weekly here, that that the co-stars of his fiance were criticizing him over rumors of infidelity. So I imagine that there's going to be lots of fireworks on the upcoming season. And as always, this show is brought to you by Bravo.
You were saying that there was drama. I'm like, there was always drama on these shows because these are allegedly real shows, but probably not. But yeah, there's always drama. I don't know. I the background noise. I mean, like, I end up seeing a lot of these shows, so I'm generally familiar with the comings and goings of, you know, the Housewives, and we used to keep up with the Kardashians. It's now not in our household, probably for the best. Speaking of, Taryn, this is not in the docket. Did you watch the Brady roast?
Yeah.
I thought it was one of like the best pieces of content I've ever seen.
I thought it was really funny. It was really long. 3 hours.
Oh, very long.
Long time. They probably could have cut a couple of the Dais members there. They didn't necessarily need all of them, but
they probably could have cut your boy Randy Moss. He was kind of weak.
It was nice to see Randy at the very least. He could have been one of the guys just kind of sitting there.
Yeah, well, they have like Willie McGinnis in the back and like Matt Light, and like they give Randy Moss the mic. He actually had an untenable position because he had to go after Bledsoe and Nikki Glaser, who were like both incredible. I actually thought
crushed.
After those two, we could really only go down after those two.
Yeah, agreed. But I thought it was interesting that the only time that Brady stood up and was not okay with a joke was about the Robert Kraft massage joke at the very beginning, and otherwise was like perfectly content to let Giselle just get completely dumped on for the entire night by everyone. So I thought that was interesting. Probably means that there's some truth to those rumors, which you know, that's tough for him, but he seems to be processing it okay. He agreed to get paid a bunch of money to have people insult his ex-wife for 3 hours.
That's what I was going to say. My friends were all like, why would he do this? And then we all like, maybe it's just a galaxy brain situation. He gets paid tons of money. And really the core of the jokes were like how bad your wife is and the jiu-jitsu instructor and black belt. And listen, this is a family-friendly podcast, but there's some bad stuff in there.
And also squash the beef between the three heads of the dynasty, right? Which I thought was especially important going forward after the Apple TV series didn't necessarily make Belichick look good.
I thought Belichick had a good joke in there that that his roast was the 10-part Apple TV series. That's really good. Anyways, I've been telling my daddy has to watch
it. I thought
it.
Brady's joke that his favorite ring, it's no longer the next one, it's the camera that picked up Bill Belichick leaving that girl's house.
Oh my
house.
God. And then Nikki Glaser had the eighth ring about you got your ring back from Giselle. Listen, I if sports and comedy roast, like if they do, like my friends and I were talking like who they're gonna get next, and I'm like, Tiger Woods is probably, if you had to make odds at the at our proverbial Conduct Resorts World and Casino, Tiger would be the favorite of the book. I think he has that sense of humor. And I think people like love him. Like MJ, I don't think would do it. I think Tiger would do it.
Yeah, I don't think MJ could sit there and let all these people that he thinks are losers compared to him make jokes about him. LeBron would be a good one eventually.
LeBron would be a great one. He would do it only because he doesn't want to get left in the dust, especially if they would call it the goat roast. But LeBron has so much out there. Like the main people would just make fun of him for lying. I mean, that would just be every joke. Well, okay, let's I derail this because we spoke about Kim Kardashian and I enjoyed that part of the roast as well, but neither here nor there. Okay, Taryn, so I'm gonna let you pick your spots. We got House versus NCAA.
Sorry, can I ask you one question about Ipe?
Sure.
So he agreed to plea out, right? He's facing 33 years. Do you think that this means that if this Boyajian is also cooperating with the authorities, that there is some other bigger player that they're trying to take down through all of this, whether it be one of the casino entities abusing their licenses or somebody else?
Well, the short answer is probably. We don't quite know who or what it is. There is a criminal complaint against Matthew Bauer. I'm not quite sure where that stands, but that's the underlying bookmaker. And it looks like, you know, again, I think Boyajian is denying this, but it looks like he was the runner for this guy. I think it's, I thought it was Bauer, but it's spelled B-O-W-Y-E-R. Bowyer? Bowyer?
Yeah, Boyer.
Boyer? Maybe Boyer.
Maybe.
Yeah, I've never seen Boyer with a W, but it doesn't really matter. I imagine there's some bigger fish if they're willing to give Boyajian immunity. But the casinos seem like that's a big piece here. So, yeah, I mean, if the casinos are the one at the end of the day and they're aware of how this money's coming in, you know, certainly the casinos are the biggest fish possible. So let's see. But we have yet to see the real shoe to drop since the legalization of gambling has occurred. Like, who's going to get dinged here? So I think people were kind of looking at Shohei as being the biggest name. But maybe they're going after the casino. So I think it's a fair question. I don't think we quite know the answer to it, but something certainly worth watching. So let's do this, Taryn. I'm going to let you – I want to start with House.
Go from Housewives to House.
Yeah. What is – oh, Housewives. Taryn, I miss you, Taryn. You're very quick. You're very quick. House versus NCAA. We've talked about this a bunch. Anytime that I'm sure, you know, you teach your class, I teach my class. I talk about House a lot. Whenever it comes up on when I do media appearances or whatever else, we talk about House being the kind of the big shoe to drop. In a nutshell, House versus NCAA is a case filed by a swimmer. I think his name is Grant House. Terms
Grant
of Stam-
House.
Was it
yep.
Stanford? Is that what he was? Where he's swimmer?
I think so. Yeah,
I think so. So Stanford swimmer, he, you know, he's the lead plaintiff in this class action lawsuit. For without getting into all of the details of this case, it is essentially a $1 billion case
with the attempt to redefine what NIL means. So NIL, under the modern tenets of since California passed Fair Pay to Play, was basically third-party revenue where people were exploiting your name, image, and likeness to make a profit. So I don't know, just use your imagination. That's signings and apparel deals and this and that and this and this and that. Okay, so the law is clear. For those type of deals where your NIL is being exploited, you have to pay the athletes money. What this case is looking at, and the biggest piece of the pie that we have not yet had any movement on, is broadcast revenue. So this case, House versus NIL, refers to that as like BNIL, broadcast NIL, and a number of different categories, which, you know, these athletes are claiming we should also be entitled to these additional revenues. We should redefine what NIL is, and these NCAA and its member schools, you know, great. NIL is legal now, but if the definition is messed up. And we believe now this is a class action lawsuit with all of us and potentially treble damages that we can go after the NCAA and win if this goes to a trial, you know, in the vicinity of $3 to $4 billion in damages. So that's a case that for the NCAA's docket for their financial exposures, it's the highest one that I'm aware of. So that's why this case has been in the news historically. Karen, do you want to give the update as to why we are talking about this case today?
Yeah, the big news was that there was news of a settlement conference in Dallas between the legal teams for the NCAA and for the plaintiffs. And so really, when you think about what a settlement would look like, it's really going to be two parts there, right? This is the first part being the compensation that would be owed to the NCAA athletes for these BNIL rights. But this would also possibly settle other cases that are headed up by Jeffrey Kessler, who's obviously really well known in the sports law space as a big time litigator for Hubbard. And Hubbard is about Alston payments and Carter, which is really challenging the amateur system as a whole. This is why the NCAA is permitted to cap grant in aid as the cap for what the value that they're willing to pay out to a student athlete would be, what the schools are able to pay out. And so that one really has the potential to shake the ground upon which the NCAA sits. And the reason why I think that it's interesting that those two would be grouped in here is because of the second part. The second part would be what the future of revenue sharing looks like. And I think we got a little bit of a glimpse into this. It was last month that Virginia, my home state, signed into law a provision that was going to allow the schools to pay the student athletes directly for their name, image, and likeness rights. And so that sort of direct payment going towards that, whether there's going to be a cap that's negotiated as part of this settlement agreement, I think those two things kind of go hand in hand. But even as we focus on these, Dan, and Michael McCann wrote a great article about this in Sportico a couple weeks ago, you've still got these other cases that are in the wind. Johnson, which is a huge one, that's employment status under the FLSA. And then the NLRB cases, which, you know, that those could be decided at any time with USC. And that's employment status under the NLRA. And so you've got those two things that are still going to linger in addition to those Title IX considerations. Even if they settle this and these two parts are dealt with, there's still so much that the NCAA is going to have on its plate that isn't going to be sorted out by paying out the Kessler cases.
Certainly well said, Taryn. And I think the point to add, and I think you've laid it out well, the if there is a settlement here, it doesn't, put it this way, like everybody knows the concept of whack-a-mole, right? This is the biggest mole. So people are dealing with this right now. This tentative trial date, I believe, I don't know if it's been kicked, but last I saw was in January. Taryn, did they move
it? Yes.
Did they move
No,
it?
I think January is still,
I thought so,
the scheduled date.
So, you know, trial date in January, it's 6 months out. You know, I was kind of telling you offline, looks like one of my cases that was scheduled for trial is going to wrap. And that trial was in in theory going to be in 5 weeks. So that was really tight. But as cases get closer to trial, you know, sometimes, and we have this expression that we've said in the podcast before, 99.9% of cases settle. So that doesn't say when they settle. Sometimes they settle pre-suit. Sometimes they settle before depositions, which is another kind of costly endeavor. That's what happened in the Live versus PGA case. They settled right before depositions. Sometimes they settle on the courthouse steps. That's what happened in the St. Louis versus St. Louis Rams situation a couple years back. So we are not like on the cusp of trial here. So I will say this, and this is somewhat of a hot take. It's mine. I'm not in the business of hot takes, but there has been a lot of reporting of like this revenue sharing settlement and how interesting it would be if, you know, the Jeffrey Kessler, who, you know, I don't think maybe Kessler's been on the show before I was on the show, but, you know, certainly I think Dan and Kessler are friends. I have other friends in Kessler's firm, but I have not had the pleasure of speaking with Kessler. But there's certainly a narrative around this that, like, hey, yeah, this firm, Winston Strawn, is suing for $4 billion, but for the greater good of college football, they're going to agree to get less money, but agree to some revenue sharing. So I don't have any bone to pick with law firms and whatnot. And my firm is not, we don't really take contingency cases. Some firms do. I don't know if that's the arrangement here for this particular situation with House versus NCAA and Winston Strawn's fee arrangement, but I would find it, and this is coming from a lawyer, and Taryn, you are one as well. I would find it very odd that a law firm would be okay, like settling a case for the greater good that doesn't maximize the law firm's return on their investment on what hypothetically would be a contingency case. So if people didn't understand what I'm saying, this, we can put this back into a context that we've covered extensively in the show. I talked to my class about the St. Louis versus St. Louis Rams saga. Taryn, do you know what I'm getting at here? Do you remember this example?
I think so, but I need to hear it.
We were pontificating and having different St. Louis town halls. Like, you know, this is a $1 billion. I think it was a $5 billion lawsuit against the NFL for the alleged taking of or plucking of the Rams and moving them from St. Louis to Los Angeles. It was a fraud, breach of contract. It was a big case. And we said, well, if the NFL doesn't want to pay out billions of dollars in a settlement or even maybe $1 billion, what they could in theory do is offer St. Louis something creative, like the 33rd NFL franchise. And that's invaluable. That could be worth in of itself for the St. Louis market $1 billion. So maybe you settle for pennies on the dollar and you just make a proclamation that there will be St. Louis back to football, or St. Louis will get an NFL team in the next 3 years. So that sounds pretty good. And all of the St. Louisans, and I'm sure we still have many that listen to our show and that those are some of our most popular episodes. They love that idea. But when push came to shove, what was the settlement? The settlement was a $790 million monetary settlement. There was no expansion team. And why? I'm sure in part because the lawyers wanted their cut, their one third, which was like, you know, in the vicinity of $250 million, whatever the actual numbers were. So like, yeah, it might make a lot of sense. It might be great for St. Louis. It might be great for college football for some revenue sharing scheme. But at the end of the day, the lawyers, like, we have a business that involves us getting paid. It's not just like utilitarianism. So, maybe I'm not as sold as that a lawyer, not Kessler or any lawyer, is like, hey, yeah, I'll basically eliminate my fee for the greater good of humanity. If Kessler does that, like, kudos to him and kudos to the firm. But that would be atypical of most lawyers. So I'm not saying this is a bad thing for Kessler. I'm just, if that happens, he should be applauded and this and that and this. Like, I don't think quite a big deal is being made of how big of a decision that would be, number one, and how rare that would be to happen.
Yeah, so a few things on that. First of all, I think that it's a good thing that they are trying to at least get ahead of it, that they're not leaving it for the last minute. 6 months, it sounds like a long time, but again, as we know, this needs to, any sort of settlement deal will need to be approved by the judge, first of all, which, you know, that's not a sure thing. And really to have time to go into place if we're going to be looking at a completely different system. And speaking of the judge in this case, I think another layer of the onion here is it's Judge Wilkin. And I think that the plaintiffs
Judge Wilkin of NCAA fame,
Yes.
O'Bannon, Alston.
The Judge Wilkin.
I was gonna say Claudia. I think we're on a first name basis at this point.
We love Claudia. But the key there being that the plaintiffs have to feel like they have a pretty good shot at winning. And the NCAA is currently on a tremendous losing streak when it comes to court, ever since O'Bannon, really, and then obviously Alston being the big one. But the NCAA is also fighting on so many different fronts. You got to think that the plaintiffs feel really good about their spot here. But if you consider that Kessler could then fold up these three cases into one, and maybe he doesn't feel as good about one as he feels about the other. Maybe they don't feel as good about Carter as they feel about getting the Alston back payments or getting the payments for BNIL rights. And that could be the case also. And we're probably never going to know that, right? But maybe when this all shakes out, we can get our friend Adam Dale to come on and at least talk about these cases more generally, talk about where the system is, because I think it would be really interesting to hear from somebody who is at the epicenter of this.
We love Adam. Adam's friend of the show. He spoke to my class board, and that's one of the people I was alluding to that I know in the circles. I think this case is probably too hot for him to be able to speak on it. In terms of just,
I meant generally about the system.
Yes, that's totally fair. I would, Adam wants to come to the show. We know Adam listens to the show, but
standing invitation for Adam.
Yeah, right? Adam can come on whenever he wants. Adam, he's a Westchester guy, so he spoke to my Pace class early this semester. So, nice. And Adam, for my Pace students, Adam predicted a lot of things that are happening right now. So, Adam, Adam knows what's up. I didn't want to forget this piece of this. Again, we have so many arrows pointed at the NCAA, and I guess I'll be just very quick on this particular point. And Taryn, you alluded to this. I'm just making sure people understand this. Even assuming that case gets settled, there are still other cases and other arrows that are pointed at the NCAA. So, it'd be pretty big, but that doesn't necessarily, like, the settling this case would be big. It doesn't mean that the NCAA is going to survive all of this. So we have, I think that's been our prediction every year for the last, like, I think it was Mike Lawson that had the prediction, like, the NCAA will cease to exist. Bold predictions in 2024. Like, that's not going to happen. The NCAA is going to cease to exist.
Mike, you're wrong about that, Mike.
Yeah. But, like, if we put odds on it, okay, like, it's Taryn, do you bet? I think we could talk. Taryn, are you a big DraftKings guy? You bet on DraftKings?
No, it's not legal in Minnesota.
Well, hypothetically, if you were a DraftKings guy, there are alt lines. So, like, we'll talk about the Knicks in a minute. You could bet alt lines. So it's like, do you think Jalen Brunson is going to score 20 points, 25 points, 30, 35? And the odds obviously shift as you get higher. So, like, 20 points, Jalen Brunson always scores 20 points. So that's like minus 1,000. So will the NCAA exist in a year? Yeah, like, that's minus 10,000, whatever, make up a fake number. But if you get to year two, year three, year four, year five, you're getting a little bit closer to potentially an even money bet. So that's the point of this. There are so many cases now, transfer rules, unionization, and we're certainly not going to get so far in the unionization bucket, but the NCAA is not, even if they settle this case, the NCAA is not necessarily saved. And those odds might change a little bit at the conduct detrimental resorts world and casino, but still the favorite to go down at some point. Taryn, anything else on this, or are you safe to move on to the College Football Players Association?
No, I think we can move on.
Okay. Take the lead here and then I will jump in.
Yeah. College Football Players Association. We've had Jason Stahl, who's one of the directors of that entity, join us on this show before.
And Minnesota guy, right?
Yeah. I taught at the University of Minnesota, and he's a very interesting guy. The College Football Players Association is a really interesting entity. We've also had Maddie Salamone come on, and she's been fantastic. She also does some work. I believe she's on the board of the CFBPA. They made a very interesting proposal, and I believe that this was this week. And essentially what they're proposing is a new approach that is going to really prioritize getting those collective bargaining rights, and not just for the College Football Players Association, but for other union entities that could pop up. As we know, the Dartmouth players are union, the college basketball players are unionized, I believe, through the SEIU. And so that would be one possible union entity that could enter here. But The point is that they're looking for collective bargaining rights and to codify that on behalf of the student athletes, not for their own benefit, but for the benefit of the players primarily. And so I think this is really interesting because they are not as focused on employment status, but to really focus on collective bargaining. And so, Dan, I'll kick it to you, but my initial glance here, I believe that this is probably a solid gamble on behalf of the Players Association, because I think that employment piece, we talk about the multiple different fronts, I think that's going to be addressed by either the NLRB case or by Johnson. And so maybe employment is something that they don't necessarily have to expend their political capital upon, and they can focus on what is really going to be valuable here, which is those collective bargaining rights.
Right. I think I did a hit this week for Baylor Sports Radio, and it's I think Sikkim 365 is the station, and we're just kind of going over this concept, and it's again not new to you and I who have been looking at this closely, but to get to we could say collective bargaining, but to get to revenue sharing, which is an aspect that would come from collective bargaining, you don't necessarily need unionization. Like there are elements to, like, we think of employment and unionization in the sports context of being one and the same, because we look at the NFL, we look at Major League Baseball, we look at the NBA. You don't necessarily have to do that. There are certain items in that you can kind of a la carte, you could pick, like, hey, maybe employment doesn't make the most sense. Maybe it doesn't make this most sense to basically give all these athletes across all these schools minimum wage, right? When there are not every sport is a revenue generating sport. That would be one of the aspects of being declared an employee. So maybe you don't need the full works, right? Like when I go get my car wash with my youngest daughter, who loves the car wash, she loves me to, put the windows down. Like I don't generally do the works, right? Cause I don't need to get vacuumed. I don't need to get out of the car. Like we just do the outside, we do the exterior. Like mm-hmm. That's kind of what we're alluding to here, that the CFBPA has realized we don't need to do everything under the sun, including employment. We can pick our spots and kind of address issues as they may within collective bargaining. Similarly, just as a separate track, like state law can provide for revenue sharing, as some state laws have tried to do unsuccessfully. So we can as a hypothetically, because sometimes I work with schools, sometimes I work on the other side, but like pressure can be applied to revenue sharing without necessarily being deemed employees. So I think that's an important concept, but not necessarily a novel one.
Yeah, and I think that this also leaves the door open, right? You mentioned it, but not every student athlete is going to want to be an employee either. I think that we think of employment as being beneficial, but I think it's honestly going to be more beneficial to old school college football fans who are interested in how the system used to be. If you want certainty, an employment contract is probably going to be more likely to provide that from an institutional aspect or from a fan aspect. And that's what I hear most often when people are upset with how the system is as we work through this interim phase. But it's not necessarily going to be the most beneficial system for a student athlete. And so I think that this is interesting because it loosens the tie between these two concepts in a way that that could be very valuable to players.
I think that's about right. Let's close, Taryn, on this last piece of business. I reminded there's a I'll tell you a funny story when we close out here with my daughter's soccer team, but neither here nor there. Okay, Taryn, we were talking earlier in the house context about NCAA being the betting favorite not to exist within a certain amount of time, right? I think it's on the board, so to speak. There was a news story that happened in the last 24, 48 hours that some might argue shifts the odds back in the NCAA's favor. I do want to at least point it out. Taryn, I'll just lay up for you on this one. There is legislation that's now being proposed, and we'll talk about some of the responses to it, but proposed at the legislative level to give the NCAA that antitrust exemption that they've been asking for some time. Now, if that passes, yes, that will prolong the life of the NCAA, maybe indefinitely, certainly possible. It's not going to save the NCAA entirely for a number of reasons, of which we've talked about some on the show and some otherwise. Member schools could opt out. There's a lot of different ways the NCAA might cease to exist, which are certainly in play. But if the NCAA gets that antitrust exemption, that is a huge, massive win for the NCAA. And all of us pundits out here, if you're trying to bet the line live and catch it right, you got to be very mindful of this looming antitrust exemption, which some members of Congress are inclined to do. Now, I know not everyone is in support of these this proposed legislation, but we got to report the news as we see it. So it's at least got some momentum at the highest levels of the federal government. Taryn, thoughts on this safe harbor proposal?
Yeah, for sure. And not the first time that we've seen something like this. It is pretty similar to the bill that was proposed by Ted Cruz last year. And it is something that has come out on the NCAA's favor for once. We've been hearing a lot of things that are negative for the NCAA that really threaten their existence. And this has the potential, I think, like you mentioned, to help them. And so two House representatives, two Republicans, Representatives Fry from South Carolina and Moore from Alabama, they proposed this Protect the Ball Act. And the ball there stands for benefits for athletes and limit liability. And we can discuss whether that's an oxymoron, but this bill would grant an absolute liability shield to the NCAA so that they can establish and enforce rules and protect them from potential claims under, quote, any law or regulation, unquote, so long as those rules are in compliance with amateurism. And in a way, this seems like it would really just codify the dicta from 1984 Board of Regents, where Justice Stevens said that the NCAA has a ton of room there to establish rules that protect the spirit of amateurism. And so, yeah, I think this is huge for them. Whether it has any possibility of passing, unlikely. I think this really would require a bipartisan haul here to get it through both houses and up to the president. And who knows if the president would sign this, because it's an election year, and whether this is going to be something that is politically popular remains to be seen.
Taryn, you said codify dicta, and I'm like, it's a real lawyerly phrase. I think you had like we're on Westlaw, codify within two words of dicta. You know, I'm proud of you, Taryn. Hey, it's listen, we'll see where it goes. We got to report the news. I wanted to report on the statement by the collective association. So there's a lot, and I think that's kind of the looming elephant in the room. And full disclosure, I do work with collectives in my neck of the woods in New York and some outside the state. But if schools are allowed to pay athletes directly, right, which is where the Virginia law is getting to, where there's the NCAA kind of lifted that this past, I think it was April 16th, because I had a call with one of my schools, but they lifted prohibitions to allow schools to be able to help facilitate, enable, and support college athletes, and irrespective of what their state law says. So New York has about for a year and change had a law in the books that said that the schools can help and enable, identify, support student athlete initiatives, whatever it was. But the NCAA didn't have that. So my schools were a little nervous to adhere to state law with this weird NCAA law in the books. So the NCAA has now adhered to that. So now the elephant in the room is if schools can, and obviously schools still can't pay players directly, that would be the next step. Right, pay for play, which is still prevented. If and when that happens, I'm not quite sure what the collective landscape looks like. So collectives are getting kind of this weird gray area, and it's not I think this collective association, I'm about to read their statement, I think they did a good job of banding together to make sure that they exist in the next iteration of college sports, which I think they're doing a really good job in. But, once schools can pay the athletes directly, if and when that happens, I'm not quite sure what the role of the collectives are. So they have to kind of carve that out for themselves. Here's the comment from the Collective Football Association, Russell White. I've been on a panel with him before. He's a good guy. I don't know that well, but seemed pretty impressive when I spoke to him. Quote, and this is in response to the Safe Harbor proposal. The Collective Association has worked with many members of Congress on crafting thoughtful legislation to bring stability to college sports. Sadly, we cannot support an effort to give power back to traditional powers, whose Intransigence, I think that's the word, brought us to this point in the first place. This, quote, blank check to the NCAA overrules the unanimous Supreme Court decision, and we feel Congress can and must do better. The collective association, blah, 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 and they're trying to meaningful proposal to Congress that can bring bipartisan support. So, again, you're not going to make everybody happy with this, but I give Congress credit that they've been involving the collectives, athletic directors, the NCAA, agents. They've all really kind of been involved in this pie of discussions. But I do find it interesting that the Congress has made a proposal that the collectives, who are one piece of this pie, seem to be vehemently against. So I don't know. Well, neither here nor there, but we got to just point it out and call it as we see it. Okay, Taryn, we're almost at the hour mark since we started recording. Let's, I know you wanted to discuss the NBA. I'll give you the mic here. Well, actually, let me say this. Let's go Knicks, LGK. But I guess before we do LGK, Taryn, can I tell you something? Before we do this, before we get to our basketball route, I did mention I would say it. Our promo code for Themis, if you people are curious, you want $500 off. Promo code is eligible through the end of May. $500 off on Themis Bar Review. Use promo code CDThemis500, all lowercase, CDThemis500. We're going to have a new promo code, I think, at the end of May, but people need it. Just if you're listening to this episode late, we always have promo codes. If you have questions about Themis, just reach out to us, and we will hook it up. Okay, so Taryn, the New York Knicks, they're up 2-0. The New York Rangers are up 2-0. I grew up technically in a big market, and there's a lot of bias that New York gets the calls, fixes in, they want LA in the finals, they want big markets, they want Boston, they want New York, they want this. So, Taryn, I don't think you know I was going to say this, and I know why you brought this topic up. I watched my Knicks play the 76ers, and I thought calls kind of went both ways, bad calls for the Knicks, bad calls for the Sixers. Two games into the series, and I'm a pretty big Knicks fan, I watched the games. The Knicks have been on the right end of a lot of questionable calls, albeit a small sample size. But as a Knicks fan, I'm okay to admit that I think we have been getting some advantageous calls. So hopefully that doesn't flip when the game goes to Indiana, but I do think we've been getting some suspect calls. Okay, Taryn, I don't know what I think I know what you're going to say here, but what do you think? Do you think something afoul going on in the NBA?
No, I don't think that they're getting those calls because they are New York or the Knicks, right? If that were the case, I think the Knicks would have had a little bit more success over all of these years when they weren't making any runs in the playoffs, right? But
hard to have success when you trade for Eddie Curry and you look at those top 10 lists and the Knicks have like five of the worst trades in NBA history, but go on.
Yeah, I think the Knicks for a significant period of time were more focused on being sexual harassment all-stars over putting all-star teams on the court. But look, my point is, I don't think that is the case. I think that there are a lot of poorly officiated games throughout professional sports. I think that so many officials get carried away by crowds and they want to make the crowds happy. Or some of them are sick and they want to make the crowds mad at them and they want to make it about them. But that's the key. They want to make things about them. And I think that that has led to poor officiating in all of the major sports leagues. And so I don't think that this is a big market, small market thing. I thought that Rick Carlisle made plenty of mistakes yesterday that were not influenced by the fact that Indianapolis is not a huge market.
Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle.
Yeah, that's right. And a very successful NBA head coach. He's had multiple stops, different places. Won the, 2011 NBA Finals with the Dallas Mavericks. He's a really good coach. I think he probably said this in part to fire up his guys, even though he tells them the opposite and to not make it about the officials. I thought he was wrong. I don't think that is the reason that those calls. And I think specifically he's talking about the moving screen in Turner in game one, the kickball in game one,
both bad
the
calls.
Double dribble the other night.
I don't think I've ever, the double dribble was very weird. They called it and they waved off a double dribble with
super weird. It was a carry.
Have you ever seen that? That they just like overturned a double dribble call?
No,
like,
because I don't think that they're supposed to do
that. But you can't like it was again, I'm a Knicks fan. Like it was kind of clear that they didn't that it wasn't a kick ball, but like it was also clear that it wasn't a double dribble. One got overturned, one didn't, and there was no challenge involved. So I maybe one of these NBA rules people can come on and tell us how that was possible. But I don't recall seeing that in my NBA history of watching games.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to hear it, but the I think that those are bad calls. But my point is, I don't think it's because it's New York. I don't think it's because it's the Knicks. I think that there's poor officiating in all of the leagues. Look, the other night in game two in Denver, Jamal Murray, who is a baby and embarrassing to the league, the softest Canadian after Drake, threw a heat pad onto the court after trying to throw a towel at a referee too. And all he got, in addition to making the money sign, which Rudy Gobert got fined $100,000 for, is a $100,000 fine. No suspension.
Taryn, remind the podcast listeners where you're from and what team you root for in basketball.
I live in Minnesota, so oh. I root for all the Minnesota teams.
My team
growing up is the Washington Wizards, and so I
no,
have a lot of
Taryn,
hope.
you have a bias against this Jamal Murray stuff. Just gotta disclose the bias. But go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, I root for the Minnesota teams,
but I'm a
big Wizards guy. And one day it could happen for us. You know, they're going to have the number one pick, Rob Dillingham. He could turn into Anthony Edwards, maybe. Anyway,
maybe not. But it's fair. You told me you wanted to bring it up, and I'm like, candidly, I do think the Knicks have been getting a lot of calls, but it's a short series, and then it's a small sample size. But we also did talk about that the NBA is in the business of, like, if the NBA just like rigged things in favor of each team, we'd have four game series. And everyone, those big market teams have as much rest as possible. There's also the theory that people have, like, the NBA wants to extend games and have six game series and seven game series. Like, you know, you can't have it both ways. I'm certainly not in the realm of, of the brackets of like huge conspiracy theorists, like, you know, that the aliens built the pyramids and like tinfoil hats and, you know, all this other crap, like not anywhere near there. But like, yeah, I do think it's convenient that like, if you do look at who gets the most controversial calls, like go back to the Lakers, Kings series. And then like, from a number of years ago, or even I think it was, if anybody watches or has read up on the Tim Donaghy situation, there's a lot of question marks as to the NBA potentially covering up some of the loose ends in that series. So like, I'm not ready to say that there's no conspiracies.
That 0-2 Western Conference Finals for sure. A Donaghy special, but what about the 2006 NBA Finals? Like that,
who's that?
Probably
who's
the
in that
poorest official. That was the Heat when, like, looking at Dwayne Wade got him a trip to the free throw line.
Well, LeBron was on the Heat.
No, he wasn't.
Oh, that was the Shaq era.
Yeah, but Shaq was injured.
Oh, yeah, Shaq and Wade were on the team. I mean, that's pretty box office.
Shaq was injured. Wade basically won it by himself. It was unbelievable, really.
Listen, big market teams. We're talking about the Miami Heat. I mean, that's Miami's a big market.
It's not bigger than Dallas.
Okay. Well, then it's a tie. Then they're both big markets, and then like, then I guess it's a fairly officiated game. Taryn, it's a tie. So then we can. Let's see how the rest of the Knicks series is officiated. But I think now that everyone's on notice, I think we'll be a lot of makeup calls. Like, and then it's like, okay, now they're makeup calls. Now we're acknowledging that the series is not being treated fairly. So it is what
Buddy,
it is.
The Knicks have 5.5 healthy guys. All right.
We're in trouble.
If Rick Carlisle can't figure out how to beat five dudes, that's his problem.
Fair. Okay, Taryn, let's close with this. Let's do, I'll tell you, I think last time we recorded an episode was on the eve of the NFL draft. I had a big bet on JC Latham to be drafted top 10. Because we arbitrage and we got the line that was incorrect based on some mock drafts. Rest assured that bet hit, so that was a really nice win. I'm okay to admit this, Taryn. Hopefully, I don't lose my Knicks fandom. A lot of reports last night that Jalen Brunson was hurt; he wasn't going to come back to the game. The live betting odds on his point totals remained at 32.5, and I'm like, gonna take the under here. Not quite sure what's happening. So your boy, we sometimes use Twitter to profit off of some bets.
Where did he finish with 27?
29. I just had to sweat that out. That was really scary, but That's what I get for betting against my the best player on my team to score less points. And I would have deserved a loss there. But listen, you got to get the money in good. Taryn, I did something a little dangerous. I did something dangerous, and you're going to hold me accountable to this. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. The Denver Nuggets, Taryn, I have a large wager on. And I know you're going to be mad at me. I know we're going to be texting each other. Now you're going to be yelling at me. I am not aware of another team with this profile that has an MVP, multiple-time MVP, who is, I would say, clearly the undisputed best player in the NBA, defending champions. I'm not aware of a profile of this team being eliminated in round two and being, like, romped and just, like, knocked out in five games or sweep. So, listen, you're going to get mad at me, but the odds for the Nuggets to win the series are now plus 425. I placed a large wager on the Nuggets to come back. Don't be mad at me. I just did the research, and I'm like, listen, they're not that bad. Minnesota's not this good. I like the Nuggets at plus 400 to win the series. Don't be mad at me. I did it, though.
No, that'll make it even better, Dan.
I'm just telling you. I did it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. I did it.
I feel really good about the Wolves.
I'm sure you do, but I'm not from Minnesota or Denver, and I feel pretty good about the Nuggets.
Okay.
Friendly bet offline. We'll find one. Friendly bet. Okay, let's close here, Taryn. We announced that this week the 10 under 10 series is back. We did announce we had some big things in the works. We've done the writing competition. We are back with the 10 under 10 series. If it's official, we put the link is on my LinkedIn. It's on my Twitter. I should probably pin it to my Twitter. That would be really smart. Let me do that now. I'm so smart. I totally forgot to do that. It's on my Instagram. It's on the link in my bio on my Instagram. It's really anywhere I'm on social, I put it up. We are looking for 10 outstanding individuals who are within 10 years of their law school graduation. You could really be in law school too if you're that impressive, depending on what you're doing. But yeah, 10 individuals within 10 years of their law school graduation who are doing tremendous things in sports law. We had in-house counsel for teams. We've had big agents. We've had outside counsel for Major League Baseball. You know, we've had some big people win this award before. So if you know of somebody, you could just drop us a DM. We have a formal like application link. But if you don't really, if you're a listener of the podcast and you don't want to be like, Dan, I really don't want to fill out all this stuff. I almost cursed. Family-friendly show. Taryn, by the way, do you know who Sketch is? Are you a big Sketch guy?
No, I don't know who this is. And I feel that's what's made me feel old, honestly, because I can't keep up with, I spend so much time online and I don't know who this guy is. And he all the sports teams are like.
Well, he always says he curses and he goes, sorry for cussing. So I'm not on TikTok. I'm not on Twitch or anything, but he's all over my Instagram feed. Like it's like, I somehow the feed is, they feed knows, but, maybe, I have one of my agents I work with that is, trying to represent Sketch. I think he's got to get in line at this point. This guy is blowing up, but neither here nor there. But yes, if you are the Sketch of sports law and you are a rising star, or if you just want to drop someone a name in our comments and be like, this person should be nominated, I will unofficially count them as a nomination. So you don't have to fill out the whole form. If you have someone, or even yourself, if you're listening to this podcast, which I know one of you did this earlier this week, and you work for, let's say, a professional team, and you're a lawyer for them and you don't know who's going to nominate you, you just message me and I'll nominate you because I'm aware of who's very qualified for this. So that is my ringing endorsement, the 10 under 10 series. I have now officially pinned it as we are sitting here to my Twitter account at SportsLawLoss, 10 under 10. You can nominate at that link. Shout out to our own Stephanie Weisenberger for coming up with that fancy graphic, doing the links. Stephanie is very helpful behind the scenes. Shout out to Stephanie. And Taryn, her sources, you're meeting Stephanie this weekend and amongst a number of our conduct people.
Yeah, hoping to catch up with a lot of people that I've never had the opportunity to meet in person. I'll be at the Sports Lawyers Association annual conference in Baltimore. It started today. I'll be there starting tomorrow. I am on the last panel of the conference, so I hope that people will stick around for me to weigh in with former NBPA Executive Director Michelle Roberts and the Director of Athletics at St. Joseph's University, Jill Bodensteiner, who is great. I had an opportunity to talk with her last week. And really looking forward to that panel. We're going to talk about amateur status considerations for collegiate athletes. So hope that everyone will stick around for that last panel and hoping to meet a bunch of people outside of the conference as well.
Shout out. I wish I could make it this year. I cannot, but I will. I'm there in spirit. Shout out to Maureen Weston, who had a panel earlier today. She's the Pepperdine sports law professor. Gave Conduct Detrimental a shout out on the SLA panel. So we're well represented with our team members there, our listeners. Taryn, you're on a panel. Stephanie's there today. And yeah, it's going to be great. So Bryce Goodwin's also there. A lot of other people are there. Zach Schreiber, who won 10% last year. I know I'm missing a ton of people, but a lot of people are there. So Taryn, this is probably a good time for us to probably fire up the merch bandwagon so people could find each other with like the version of the Scarlet Letter of sports law so people could see the conduct. But, you know, that's a previous iteration of conduct. Taryn, do you have time for one funny story before we put this in the books?
Please.
Okay, so I was in Disney about a month ago with my my kids, my third time going to Disney with the kids. So, you know, you go to Disney. A lot of cotton candy involved. There's a lot of kids eating, my kids eating half an ice cream and I finish it. So daddy gained a little bit of weight, when we went away to Disney and I'm like, you know what? I got to lose the weight. And saying to the kids, and this is me, maybe I should not have repeated this as much as I did, but I was very clear that, you know, daddy's going to gym, daddy's doing this. So I did not think, and then I'm just a reminder, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. I didn't really think I was saying anything wrong. It was just, you know, self-motivation, having the family keep daddy in check, right? Like, you know, all good. And we got a call from school. This is a hypothetical call because I don't have any confidence. But a hypothetical call from somebody that one of my daughters, because I won't expose them, might have been calling someone fat. And I ended up in the doghouse because daddy said he was fat. So I guess it was okay to call someone else fat. It is not. It is not okay to call someone else fat. So, listen, you tell people stories. I told my oldest daughter the story of the girl who cried wolf. And now she has nightmares of wolves. So sometimes you can't win. Sometimes you can't win. So
you know who else has nightmares of wolves?
Nikola Jokic. Very funny, Taryn.
Jamal Murray.
Jamal Murray might. Go Nuggets. Listen, fatherhood is a fun deal, but you got to be careful what you say around the kids. That has been a Parent Corner brought to you by Bill Simmons and the Bill Simmons Podcast Network. No, just kidding. At some point, Taryn, you'll have kids and we can really tell. We can tell dueling stories of kids. We can have a lot of fun with it. But
that'd be great.
Coaching soccer. Our team is, I think, 2-2. Yeah, it's all good. Okay, Taryn, anything? Did I miss anything? We good to go?
No, I think we're good.
For all of us here at Conduct Detrimental, we wish you a very happy week, a good weekend, and yeah, we'll see you next time on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.